Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a few weeks ago, we were speaking about place names and how nature and the Irish language had shaped what we call our cities, our townlands, our villages around the country. But what are the other factors that have left their mark on us and given us the places that we know and love, from the Vikings to the British, mispronunciations that stuck and the official place names that only local people know? Well, to take us through where some of those came from, I'm joined by Cathy Scuffle, historian in residence with Dublin City Council and linguist and folklorist, Robbie Sinnott. Robbie and Cathy, you're very welcome again. Thank you for joining us. So Robbie, we were talking the last time, as I said there, about nature, but we want to talk a little bit about man-made structures now and the role that they play in the names of the villages and towns.
Yeah, I suppose Bally would be probably the most common that people would know about, which is actually quite recent in terms of, it's actually just came around the time the Norman invasion, although it's definitely an Irish word. Possibly coming from Billa, which means an oak, the centre of a place. But it's definitely a homestead. But it was only started to be used, so you can tell any place that starts with the name Bally, it wasn't named before the 12th century. So it just coincided with the time that the Normans were coming to town, so to speak. So we've got the likes of Ballymoney in Antrim, Ballybay in Monaghan, Ballybunion, as everybody goes on holidays down in Munster, and Kerry Ballygar in Galway, and Ballymore, a very common one. Ballygar being a short Balle, and Ballymore being a large one.
Yeah, and generally speaking, and is that linked to the Irish for town?
Oh, it is. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is. Yeah, the Irish for town comes from that. Originally comes from Billa, then comes to Balle, meaning a homestead, and then becomes a town, a main centre of residence and stuff, especially as the monasteries started to build up around these residences.
And then we have a Doon.
Oh yeah, Doon is, there's a fair few actually. There's a lovely one with Doon because you've got Listdoon Varna, which combines a few things. The fort of the fort of the gap, so the fairy fort of the fort of the gap, Listdoon Varna, which has got everything going on there in County Clare.
So the fairies and the forts.
The fairies, yeah, that's right. You see, the Lys is, Lys and Rath is a fairy and the fort. But Dun also gives us Dundalk, Dungiven in Derry, and Dungarvan in Watford, and Dunbeg. We all know about Trump Tower, but I heard it in an ad called Tramp Tower, because they were trying to overdo the poshness of the accent. It's had a reverse effect. And we have the Rat, loads of Rats, Rat Newer in Wexford, which is the Rat of the U. And we have, we said Dungarvan, but there's Lys Canner. And Lys Tool, which is Northern Lys. And I suppose Lissy Casey's a lovely one because it's Ichasi, or Casey's Fort, Fairy Fort, which is also down in Clare. So they've got lots of Lysses going to their Lysnaski in Fermanagh. And Lisburn, which is possibly a mixture of the burn, a Scottish word meaning burn for a sort of a waterway, plus Fairy Fort Lys. So it's combining the two because I think the Irish is Lysnagadach. Lisburn in South County Antrim.
And don't mess
Kill,
with the...
We all have Kill as well.
So don't mess with the fairy force. Isn't that the best advice?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know what happens. It's still very resonant.
You can dismiss it as bunkum, but you just wouldn't take a chance, you know?
No, absolutely never. No, just like... And as people like... people talk about this fake Irishism and stuff about leprechauns, but up until very recently, people believed in that. There was all their own local words, for instance, in South Leinster, Lurican, I heard Moncon McGann catalogued all the various different names for leprechauns throughout the country. But there are many people still believe in this and are able to tell you where not to cross and where to cross and where's the best thing. And, you know, I'm not going to gainsay them anyway.
I don't think any of us should. We were just talking at the weekend, actually, a few of us, about that story that you hear in Irish houses from time to time about the field. When you go into the field in the dark, a particular field, you can't find the gap to get out, Robbie. Have you come across that one?
Well, you can. You see, there's two. That's linked to a lot of things. That's actually linked to Will o' the Wisp, which is also the idea that a light can be seen and that you follow the light and you get lost. Or another one is as a protection against the fairies, because they might want you to get lost, is if you turn your coat or your jumper or whatever inside out before you go into a field, or even before setting out at night, if you're coming home from a music session or whatever, you know, that is one way to make sure that you're going to be all right. Also, if you carry some iron of any type, that generally does the trick as well, or even some thimbles or something like that.
A few thimbles, the jumper on inside out.
Yeah. It does work, I hear.
Listen, as I said, we're not going to dismiss it. Now, Cathy, I want to talk to you about the Huguenots, because 100,000 Huguenots came from Ireland back in the 1600s, but they influenced a lot of our place names and indeed our surnames as well.
That's absolutely true, Claire. And we've great examples in Dublin. And of course, we've great examples in Dublin of how Dubliners don't speak French very well. So the Huguenots in the main were French speaking people when they arrived. So they leave, everybody who comes to Ireland leaves something of themselves behind. And the Huguenots were no different. So in Dublin, we have that wonderful lane, Marrowbone Lane.
Yes.
And that conjures up all sorts of images of butcheries and, you know, meat production and whatever. But it's absolutely nothing to do with that and everything to do with the Huguenots. So Marrowbone Lane should be Marie Le Bon Lane. And Marie Le Bon in Dublinese became Marrowbone, and it's still Marrowbone today.
Isn't that fascinating?
That's one really good example we have.
We just took it. We said we can't be bothered saying that French, it's a bit difficult, and we're just going to call it Marrowbone Lane, and that'll do you, cute Mr. Huguenot.
And one thing I have to give Dublin City Council their due, they have it correct, Oscailge. It's Lana Wirawa, Oscailge, but in the English, it's Marrowbone Lane underneath. So it's one of those wonderful curiosities we have in Dublin. And there's a couple of others very close by, if I can just briefly say.
Go ahead.
There's a lovely laneway linking, it sort of links Weaver Square. The Huguenots in the main in Dublin were weavers, so Weaver Square we get from them. And then there's a laneway that links them into the Tenters, which again, I'll just touch on in a second. But the laneway in question is Cow Parlour. And it has nothing to do with parlours or cows, but everything to do with that French again, which is the coupe perlée or the hem cutters, a trade within the weaving. And coupe perlée became cow parlour, and we still have cow parlour today.
That is fascinating.
And it links to the area called the Tenters, which is the area celebrating, actually the houses there are celebrating 100 years, one of the centenaries we have. First houses built in the Free State are in the Tenters, but the Tenters area was where the aforementioned weavers stretched out their cloth to dry after they had bleached it or washed it. So just in a very short part of Dublin, we have an amazing amount of history all linking back to one group who came to Ireland.
I do love that we took the French and sort of decided we could just say whatever we liked that sounded remotely like it. I mean, cow parlour from Coup d'Orlay is fabulous.
That's where we get tenter hooks, being on tenter hooks from the hooks where they hung out the weavers.
Exactly, and probably hung out a few other people as well, Robbie. But that's a talk for another day.
They were always at war with the lads up in with the butchers up in. Around what do you call that, Smithfield.
The Tenters were.
The Tenters were, and they actually used to have May Day riots where they'd go and try to take the other person's maypole, and there would be riots over it back in the 16th, 17th and 18th century. So that's possibly the origin of the North Side, South Side rivalry in Dublin.
One of them, Robbie, I'd say.
So you have the butchers versus the Tenters.
The Liberty Weavers, Weavers are the Liberty Boys, and they were Liberty, the apprentices to the weaving trade. And of course, as the weaving trade slumped, these lads had nothing to do, and they would have running battles on the bridges of the city. But on one occasion, they joined up together and took out the constable. So that's, as I say, their talks for another day, Claire.
And Miel Segosha is a French word that you only hear in Dublin, Miel Segosha, although there's variants of it throughout Leinster, and that's from Old French as well, which came in with the Normans, which means in Dublin, it's a real Dublinese one to hear somebody, it's probably going out of use now, but come here, Miel Segosha.
Yes, and that's from the French.
From Old French, yeah.
And you mentioned...
Well, that's what Jim Weirhe, according to him anyway, he was an expert in all these things, wrote for the Irish Times for many years about these matters.
Well, the Norsemen you mentioned there and the Norse, so take us through the place names we can trace back to them, Robbie.
Well, most of our provinces are, apart from Connacht, they're all originally, a mixture of Irish and Vikings. So Moon is Irish for Munster, but the Norse changed it into Moon's Ter, Moon's country. Lion is the Irish for Leinster, so they changed it into Lion's Ter or Leinster, Lion's country. And Ulla is Ulster, so they changed it into Ulla's Ter, which is Ulla's country. And like anywhere with Ford in it, so it is Lifford, Strangford, Wexford, Waterford, Ashford, they're all Norse names from the Norse fjord. And I suppose we also have, I suppose, some outliers like Leixlip, which is Leixlip people might want to be here themselves call it an outlier, but Leixlip being the salmon's leap. And similarly, you have Scariff, which also gives the name to Skerries, but Scariff County Clare, Scariff Welsh and Wexford. And that is from Scariff, which is now Irish, S-C-A-I-R-B-H, which means a sandbank, but originally from Norse. Most words that are beginning with S-K in English are originally from Old Norse.
Okay, all right.
Including skirt and school and all
that. Are you there as well? Claire, I can add in the three islands around Dublin.
Yeah.
The Norse word for an island is I-E-Y or A-Y. So we have Lambay, A-Y, meaning Lamb Island. We have Dawkey, EY, meaning Thorny Island. And of course, my favourite, Ireland's Eye, the one off Howth. And Howth, again, it comes from the Norse word to mean a headland. So again, these words that the Norse left behind, we use them then every day and we don't realise we're doing it.
Certainly do. And also the years of British rule, obviously, Cathy, left their mark. Bring us some of the ones that we mightn't be familiar with. Portobello in Dublin.
Portobello, yeah. Portobello, where every time we say Portobello, we're commemorating the great battle of Panama under the, you know, the British campaigns across the world. And it was led by Admiral Vernon. So nearby in Portobello, we have Vernon Street. But they all commemorate big battles or big events. And of course, we have a lot of roads as well, like say Trafalgar Road, Northumberland Road, Prince of Wales Terrace. They're all connected. Celebrating great events in British history, but of course we were part of British history at the time and they're still reflected in our place names today.
And then, Robbie, when you look at Old English, there's none of that in Ireland when it comes to the place names. We have
no.
to go to Middle English, do we?
Yeah, well, and even that is because modern English really supplanted it. It's very rare to find evidence of Middle English, but you have it in places like in Wexford. You've got Magdalen Town, Magdalen meaning Magdalene, in Middle English. Yeah. But you get a lot in unofficial place names, like the High Mares, for instance, and again, Wexford, which is the high meaning a garden, mares, like you hear Tranmere in England, for instance, or a supermere, mare being a division of land. And you've got Robin's High, which is Robin's High. And I suppose the Normans then, like just showed you going back to Bally and stuff, that when they have things like Ballymore, Eustace, etc., it's the idea that Eustace has been combined with Bally, and you've got Bally Redmond, Bally William, and Bally Valden or Walton or Baldwin's Town. So it shows that they're integrating very, very early with the Irish, and they're combining their own names with the Irish. And even, so it's there's not too much of that now. But you have with the plantations, you see, you've got this straightforward English coming in with Kingstown and Coot Hill. And Virginia, I suppose, Hackettstown. And I possibly think that Hackett may be related to that, coming from that part of the country.
Yeah, because you know, it's Kings County, of course, Offaly. Queens County became Leash.
It did. That's mm-hmm. These were very interesting, these place names changes. Because Maryborough, you see, these were the plantations of Mary, the Catholic plantations in the 1550s. So Maryborough became Port Leash, or as some people say, Port Leisha. I know some people don't like at all.
Listen, I'm from close to Port Leash. I'm from Mount Rath, and it just you hear it said officially Port Leisha. It's grand, but it's not how we say it, and we live there. You know, that's my only
people
beef.
People in Dunleary would down through the years they hated people saying Dunleary on the news, for instance. You know, and you have exactly the same thing. But you have Parsonstown, which is Burr, the old name for Burr, and the old name for. Port Arlington was Coolatunder. I don't think that's going to change back. So you've got Coolstown, which is the old name for Edenderry. And in Wexford, you've got Newtown Barry, which has now become Bunclody. And you've got Oigase, which used to be Mullinagore. So there's a good lot of... And now Dangan is interesting, which was Phillipstown in Offaly, and now is Dangan. But that brings us to, like, there was the Dangan controversy in Kerry. So people do care a lot about these things, but they care enough in the 20th century to revert to the Irish in many cases, you know.
Now, the Easter Rising, Cathy, I want to talk to you about that and the influence on street names and areas after the uprising, and the names of the leaders were used.
The names of the leaders were used. Well, the one that we had which commemorated in 1966, when we were doing the 50 years, of course, were the Ballymun Flats. Each one of the towers were called after one of the signatories of the proclamation. But if we look elsewhere, take, for example, there's a small estate on James's Walk near Rialto, and it has a number of roads in that estate, and they're called Colbert's Fort, Clark's Terrace, Mallon Avenue. So they all commemorate people involved in the Rising, Mallon, of course, being Michael Mallon. Mm-hmm. And if we move just to the other side, so the other side of James's Hospital, for example, there's a beautiful estate tucked into that, the hospital complex, and it's called Cantfort, after Eamon Cant. And every road in that estate is called after a volunteer who lost his life in the South Dublin Union, as James's was at the time, during the 1916 Rising. Okay. So it's really worth digging and finding these ones out.
Just before we're coming up to 11 now, and I have a couple of questions in that I'd love to get to. Sally Noggin, where did that come from, says a listener. Do either of you have an answer?
I'm deferring to Robbie on this one. Have you any ideas, Robbie?
Yeah, Sally is from Salyach, which is Willow. And Noggin could be anybody's guess, either from a name or Salyach on Noggin. But I think they had more research needed than that. And possibly,
there's another one here about the town in Sligo called Tubbercurry and the neighbouring town called Curry. Do you have any idea where it originates from?
Well, Tubber as well. There's loads of Tubbers all over the place, meaning Irish for well. So it's Curry's well. And or maybe perhaps curry here also could be cur, meaning a bend or a weave. So curry could be from curragh, meaning a bend, like a sickle-like bend, for instance. Lots of currons all over the country, and crown even. Crown Ford in Wexford has come from Curran Fjord. It's a mixture of the Norse, and there's a bend of a ford from the Irish and Norse.
Well,
you
might just have crossed into my next question now. Could you ask the meaning of my townland in Gorey in County Wexford, says this listener. It's called Crone Cribbin, CroneCribbin.
Well, off the top of my head, it'd be hard to do it, except Cribbin here looks to be from a surname, from Irish Cribbin, and I'd say Crone. Again, coming from Cran, because there's so many Crans around that part of the country that it's probably an abbreviated version with forward stress to Crone from Cran. So it's the shelter belt or the half moon sort of trees even.
All right, I have to leave it there. Unfortunately, I'm way over. We'll come back to you again, Cathy Scuffle and Robbie Sinnott. Great to talk to you. Let's take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.